in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see a sweeping wind. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And once again, it's cliche to say, but winning is better than losing.
It is much better, Nick, obviously. But there's also how you win. And there's the way we've been, the manner and who's been playing well in our wins allows us all to suspend disbelief that, you know, that this year might be more promising than it looked prima facie.
Oh, well, I've got some stats on that, which we'll get to later, but yeah.
Well, so do I, but mine are pretty slipshod, so hopefully yours will be better.
Well, it was a, you know, Thursday night, it wasn't an easy game to watch, and I'm sure it wasn't easy to play, but it certainly had a happy ending.
I would actually, like, even during the second quarter, I thought about this a lot. The second quarter was obviously the low light of the game because there was hardly any scoring and there was a lot of missed shots by Collingwood. And there was a period which on the replay it actually turned out to be not that long, but watching it live, it felt like there was 15 minutes where we went without an inside 50. I still think, and you know, this could be observation bias and the fact that the result turned out well, it wasn't as bad as the round two game last year. Like, there was certain, the way tactically it was being played in quite an interesting manner, the way that people were dropping off the contest and both coaches were sending players into the forward and back lines. I actually think the game, and the second half was obviously there was a lot more goals kicked that opened up. But actually overall, I thought the game was pretty decent to watch. And like, I can tell you, I was very, very excited, at times, standing up, fist pumping. I'm very emotionally, I'm marking out for Richmond right now.
Well, I've got the confession that I'm doing badly in the football tipping. And I normally take my footy tipping quite seriously, but I've tipped Richmond to lose by 2 points in each of the opening two games because I thought, well, what's the most heartbreaking loss imaginable?
Actually, I hate talking about actual betting, but I thought we've been good value the last 2 weeks and we have turned out that way. We have covered the spread quite comfortably both times.
I'm certainly enjoying this bit where we are, you know, play exciting, fast-moving football. Like, I saw a stat that I think we had 20 of 29 inside 50s in the second half. We had shots at goal from 23 of them, which is just an extraordinary percentage. And, you know, it's certainly, you know, I mentioned about the contrast with Richmond 2016. So last year we pretty much broke even on disposal with our opponents, but we got flogged on inside 50s. We were giving up minus 10 inside 50s a game, which is a ticket to, you know, roughly speaking, 13th or 14th. And this year we're pretty reasonably even in contested possessions, a little bit down on uncontested, but we're about plus 8 in minus in inside 50. So essentially we are playing far more direct football. We're getting the ball forward more, and we're kicking more goals.
You know, yeah, I'm
struggling to see a flaw.
Well. The floor is it's only two games. No. We're only two games
against two teams, possibly not likely to make the finals. But
yeah, so I was actually going to make a similar point to you, Nick, is that, you know, if you just compare this game to round two last year, we had, you know, last year we scored 88, this year we scored, 99. Once we're inside 50, we got inside 52 less times last year. So, you know, we're about the same once we're inside 50, roughly. But it took us 50 less possessions to get those inside 50s this year. Actually, it was more than that. It was 60 less possessions. So we're just playing faster and longer. And I think it changes all sorts of in last year, and I'm jumping ahead a bit to something we'll discuss later, but we were so reliant on, when you're playing static, closed football, you're reliant on very skillful players to break open the game in a pack situation. So you're relying on an incredible hand pass by Shedder or something amazing that Lids did. There was above average athleticism, but now because we've got multiple players breaking into space and who can play well in space, you've got a lot more ways you can score. So one of my theories about the Shedder loss, sorry to jump to a later issue, is that we will miss him much less than we would have 2-3 years ago, hopefully, because we have a lot more ways of scoring goals than him doing an around the back, amazing blind hand pass.
Yeah, and we're less reliant on him. We have been very reliant on him to get clearances and ground ball gets in forward 50, and I think that's another part of the story, is that because there's a lot more forward half pressure, we're generating turnovers there, and you're not having to, you know, string three or four kicks together to get it inside 50. You're just creating those opportunistic chances, and just through pressure and causing a bit of chaos, and, you know, only sometimes it comes off, but it doesn't have to come off every time. And yeah, it's much more fun to watch.
And it's good you brought up pressure, because that's the other side of this, is that the era of the corral is over. For the whole time, for the last 5 to 6 years, but especially in the last 3 to 4, when we've been a reasonable team for most of that time, we've still been terrible at tackling. Like, we're habitually right at the bottom of the AFL. We argued this many times, it's not the end of the world to have a low tackle count, but the reality was we were, and we always had really low tackle counts. We're now number 2 in the AFL in tackling. This is a step change in the way
that's after
football.
2 dry games on the MCG as well. Because the MCG, you can often get into a bit of glorified circle work just because of the size of the ground compared to some other ovals.
Particularly playing against, relatively young, they're not super young, not super uncompetitive, but they're games that, as you say, could degrade into circle work. You know, you're not playing a sort of veteran, ruthless team that's like playing against a threshing machine. Anyway, so it's 2-game sample size, but it's very different football. And the other thing, Nick, I wanted to talk about briefly was it feels very different. And if you look at the average age of the team this year and last year again, round 2, it's about the same. Like, we're playing maybe one more player with less than 50 games, but the age profile's the same, but it feels much younger because you've got guys, like, I heard a quote, might have been Carey saying on the weekend that small forwards are almost the most important players in the game right now. And, you know, all our important small forwards, they're all under 25 games. So you've sort of got, these core parts of the team rather than sort of, immediate, you know, Corey Ellis getting 10 touches off a halfback flank, or I think he got more than that last year in the Pies game. You've got guys playing really key roles, who are really young. So there's no external proof that the team is, there's no objective proof that the team is younger, but to me, the team feels younger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's some young guys in some pretty key positions. And, well, we've been talking about the small forwards, and I think it's fair to say that outside of Taylor Hunt's immediate family, there weren't many Richmond supporters bemoaning the swap of Jaden Short for Taylor Hunt this week.
No, the amazing question, if you had truth serum, the one question you'd ask him is, why didn't he play round 1? Because he's so good. He led the team in meters gained. He was crucial to the game.
I was reminded of a bit of research I did for this podcast a couple of years ago, where I think at the end of the season I looked back on the preseason to see what we what we could learn from it. And the answer was a little bit, maybe, but not very much. And in several of the preseason games, we'd played lineups that literally never played a single moment together in the course of the subsequent season. And so,
but you say that, but like that was not the case this year. This year we played all our good players in every game practically. We rotated one or two out of injury problems, but this year we seem to have a strategy, which has worked, by the way, to hit the season quickly. And yet, Jaden, I mean, we didn't seem to be blooming Jaden with the rest of them.
We got to see Tyson Stengel, but not and Ivan Soldo, but not Jaden Short. Yeah, it was pretty inexplicable. Thankfully, it doesn't mean very much because you would think that after, I think it was either number one for the game for meters gained.
He definitely led Richmond.
It was a pretty impressive effort. I mean, his disposal was good. I mean, he's always been a pretty nice kick. Question is around his defensive efforts, but I enjoyed his work, to say the least.
Yeah, I haven't been a Jaden Short fan. I know I played some good games last year, but I'm completely roached Damascus conversion. He was fantastic, and it was probably midway through the third, I was just wishing him to get the ball because he's run and carry. You know, not only is he a long penetrating kick, but you know he carries at 10 meters in a straight line too. So he's the cliche of the 70-meter player.
Yeah, good times. Well, we've made it more than 11 minutes without talking about the ruckman.
Yeah, well, or the player who was best on ground. Although that's not unusual for us. All right, Nack. I said to you this after the game. 2 weeks in a row, Nack is arguably our best, and 2 weeks in a row, had we lost, you could have argued that Nag's opponent was best on ground.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, both Grundy and Nankervis featured in the coaches' votes, and Cruiser was in coaches' votes last week, and Nank was probably pretty close and listed in our best players. I mean, there's an element of strategy there. They're clearly, you know, in some circumstances playing off each other, but yeah, it's all offense.
It is. It's a gunslinging effort, and you know it does make sense because he is so good. And it'll be interesting when he plays against the more conventional ruck because he's played against two very high draft picks, and they're high draft picks because they're good around the ground. Grundy has to be the best kick for an AFL ruckman in the AFL.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
That 60-meter goal was just beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. Although it's got some deserved love in the highlights, but the Nank,
the dummy,
shaking back. That was pretty fun too.
Yeah, that was good, and he was of course good late, which makes you a hero.
It's one of those very small frustrations is that they only ever report the top 10 draft camp results rather than all the draft camp results, but yeah, Nank clearly has a big tank because he rucked without getting a break from about, what was it, halfway through the third quarter, and yeah, he just kept on coming.
He did. I mean, he got the Sean Grigg chop out in the forward line, famously. Just quickly, if I can circle on that. He was clearly rucking. The Collingwood complaining after it. I can see where you're frustrated out of the game, but realistically, it was pretty obvious. Griffiths was injured. I'm sure that they were game planning around the fact they expected to win the tab.
On the broadcast, I heard them talking about it 5 minutes beforehand. Sean, you're up. Maynard just, you know, he's a young guy, not a bad looking player, but yeah, just clear poor awareness of what was going on around him.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, with Sean Grigg that he really has, he's done the workman jobber Rob, like, I just noticed, on the, like, as you know, Nick, I've been a fan of Sean Griggs, but, you know, he's getting to sort of 70-80% popularity on forums, which is good as you get, unless you're an absolute gun. And, you know, that's because of a long, long body of work. And that goal again was just another solidifying his status amongst Richmond fans.
I know. He almost deserved to get a special award for the only guy on either team who slotted a long set shot all night.
Yeah, and Grundy. Oh, set shot. Yeah, quite right.
Actually, on that point, Collingwood's kicking, they certainly kicked badly, and the game should have been closer. I mean, our set shot conversion was pretty poor as well. But part of the reason why we won was that we had about five goals kicked out of the goal square, whereas Collingwood essentially had none. And that generating easy shots at goals does go a long way to winning you a game.
That's true. I don't want to overdo this narrative because we'll lose one when it goes the other way. Look,
and like we have games like the Melbourne game last year that was just, you know, that was atrocious conversion. So these things come around, but you know you can help your ability to be lucky by where you get your shots at goal.
By the way, I just checked what the expected. The expected and the expected based on, that's the champion data, based on the quality of the shots. And on that, we would have got 109. So yes, we did shoot badly and they would have got 94. So we still would have won, but the margin would have been slightly closer. I love that stat.
Me too.
Okay. Now we should mention him passing the
probably ground player.
Yeah. The duel between the two stars of the, which were Treloar and Cochin. Interesting. Cochin was, rated on the champion data as the best ground game on the best player on the ground from both teams, whereas Treloar was the fifth best Collingwood player. So take the advanced metrics. And this is champion data, not the AFL rankings, which I really hate.
Which are notoriously fuzzy. Yeah.
But
well, there you go. But I thought Treloar was great.
Oh, so did I. I thought it was awesome. I honestly was sort of contemplating a bit of our strategy for him in the first three quarters seemed to be let him die of leather poisoning, which sort of worked because in the last he wasn't as good. By the way, how much did you enjoy that moment where he took a mark and Cochin landed with his knees in his back and put all his weight on him late in the game?
It was pretty tidy.
Yeah, because I actually thought it was actually important in the game because, you know, they're running on empty at that point and you need to make them pay. Anyway, Cochin, 26 disposals, a lot of metres gamed, not the sort of 2016-2015 sideways 10-metre chips. Led the team in pressure acts and led the team in score involvements. That is an unusual combination and that's elite. Behavior. And on top of that, he got the big spectacular mark, tackles that everyone liked and seven clearances. So yeah, it's
pretty solid body of work. I mean, for all the talk about getting more help from Castillo, Caddy and, Prestia, I thought they were both slightly off, this week. I mean, Prestia is a very good right foot kick. I mean, he kicks with his wrong, kicking with his wrong foot's not so good, but normally he's a bit tidier than that in his disposal. And actually, I thought Caddy.
A bit, he went at 42% from 24. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I thought Caddy didn't win a ton of ball, but he's good as a forward at, you know, screening for his man and doing little things like that, which. Yeah, which I was quite impressed by. Maybe it's
he kicked one too. So I got a bit pissed off with his disposal during the game. But if he kicks 2-1, you feel better about his game.
So still happy. But yeah, you know, Cochin, great game, and I always come back to I think players' health really plays a huge impact on how they're going, and I think he's running on top of the ground at the moment.
Culture.
Mm.
From his mysterious 3-year injury. There's one player who I'm starting to hate slightly less. Now, I can say this because I haven't actually confessed this on the show, but I may have implied it a few times. Rhys Conker has annoyed me so many times. I can't stand the way he kicks the ball, the way he up and unders it, the way he's got no penetration, the way he's got no strength in his hips to break tackles, and I can't stand it because I just sit there saying all of this was obvious in juniors. But having got that off my chest, I quite liked his game.
Yeah, I've liked both his games. There was, when he was re-signed, I was seriously wondering what functional AFL skill that he had shown last year. Because, I was a big fan of him. His first couple of years at the club tracked exactly the way you would want, and then he's just stagnated. And, yeah, the signs of him being a useful senior footballer are extremely welcome.
Yeah. And the sort of, he's more instinctive in a traffic situation than Brandon Ellis.
Mm.
I just bring that up because they both played a sweeper role, in the last few years. Ben Lennon's an interesting one, Nick.
Yeah. So he tried hard, but in the first half, but mostly got jumped on by Jeremy Howe. And of the, enormous quantity. I think Collingwood had 9 players from other clubs in their teams. They didn't give up a ton to get Jeremy Howe, and that is one that I'm kind of jealous of.
But yes, but he if you look, he was getting to the point where he dropped the mark, and he's a high skill player, so. You think when he's not nervous, I think he was just nervous and a bit stiff. He was dropping marks, but he was getting to contests.
Yeah, that's true.
And he kicked, obviously, the key goal. So statistically, he had 9 touches and 1 goal. It's like a Lloyd game.
Mm. Didn't he have 2 goals? Do you have 2 goals?
No, it depends whether you count the Hawley goal or not.
Which
I think officially, no, he didn't get. He was still actually on the champion data stats, perhaps because he kicked the key goal. He was mid ranked amongst our players.
He had a pretty key goal assist. Like his AFL skills, he's certainly not quick, but he's a good mark. He's a long kick and he converts his goals. And so some combination of those skills is his ticket to senior football. So,
yeah, he's trying hard. And actually, he should have, with that pass he gave off to Dusty, where Dusty kicked the ceiling goal, I actually think he should have shot a goal himself. But, the upside of passing there is that.
I did have the, when he did that, I did actually have the reaction was, it's just like the Richo days.
yes, always give it to Dusty. The other thing is, he might have just been brilliant because the nice thing about Dusty shooting was that wasted another 30 seconds off the clock. But yes, I like your point about there. You have a dominant personality who players with less than 20 games are going to kick the ball to under any circumstances that they know what's good for them. Anyway, I thought Lennon was okay and worth preserving with.
Mm. I thought Grimes did his usual quiet, quite but effective job on Fasola. He killed us last year.
He did. He had a lot of shots on goal he missed.
Yeah. It could have been a lot worse than it was. I don't know if I'd pay the full $15, but if you asked me to pay $5 and gave me popcorn to go to a cinema and watch half an hour of Nathan Buckley looking anguished highlights, yeah, I'd do that.
He's really worked on his body language. It's really improved. I think he has a career as a pro wrestling manager once he gets sacked by the Pies, which I'm going to enjoy so much. Not because I've got anything against Bucks. Actually, he's quite a good interview. He's actually one of my
He comes across as a stand-up guy.
Yeah, Apparently he's a wanker.
Really?
But like on interviews, like actually I like him and he had the guts to bring in Ede as an assistant coach. But like I actually have a lot of time for him, but I'm still going to enjoy him getting sacked because I hate Eddie. And, Eddie's going to have to sack his childhood hero.
I know. Do you think Eddie's tears taste like champagne? I kind of imagine they do.
And Nick, you know, and I'll just mention on Trelaw, hats off to the Richmond crowd for booing you. That shows my knowledge. But the, we should always remember that because of Eddie, we lost Trelaw because Eddie brought in Gubby Allen. Because of Gubby Allen, we got Neil Baum. Because of Neil Baum, we probably got Blake Carousella. Because of Blake Carousella and Neil Baum, we may have got Josh Caddy, or that might have been Prestia later, because Prestia. But, I mean, assuming that, and apparently, Jack Rinlott said on, Saturday that Blake Carousella was doing all the ball movement for the club. Presuming he's responsible for the game plan, and because we didn't get Trelaw, we got Prestia and Rioli instead. When you add all that up, we should actually maybe be a bit more grateful to Gabby Allen and Eddie, because they really did a massive favour.
I know, and I'm pretty amused at what the Chris Mayne for $1.6 million is going to look like in a couple of years. I mean, it only looks okay now, and he's pushing 29, so, yeah.
Yeah, I would have, yeah, it's funny, I would have loved him on a 2-year contract at reasonable dollars, but yeah, 4 years. Nick, I want to talk about my emerging man crush on Daniel Rioli.
Oh, nothing emerging about it. I'm in full restraining order territory.
You know, a couple of things I've noticed about him. He's starting to getting star treatment from the umpires already. I think that's a bit of cousin rub there. His goal kicking's changed.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, just two games, but he's kicking for goal well and confidently. He's been nailing his shots.
I remember as a junior, he would often lean back on his shots, but yeah.
As a junior and his first game in the first year in the NFL, his goal kicking was not a strength, and now it looks absolutely beautiful. Now maybe it's just confidence is up, but some of the dummies he does late, you know, that late dummy he did, he's just got so much confidence. Obviously, the line breaking, the pressure's key.
Winning one on one contests as well.
Yeah, and I talked about him last week as well. I'm drinking the Rioli Kool-Aid.
I know, good times. So Sheds and Griff are both confirmed outs for this week. We didn't get a ton of information from the VFL game, but who would you look at replacing them?
Well, interestingly, you raise about Griff. Watching the replay, knowing that he was going to be out, it's amazing how much you start appreciating him more because you stop focusing on how much better he should be because of his talent and then focus on what he's actually giving you and his ability to not get outmarked. I mean, we totally, even when you take injury unreliability into account, we so kept the right of the two tools that we had. Give me Griffiths any day over Ty. We were big defenders of Ty.
But particularly for $1.1 million.
Yeah, but he contests and he doesn't get beaten that one out and he gives our smalls a chance. So that's what we're going to miss. So I'll prejudice what you're going to say a bit, but who would you replace Griff with?
Well, it's tricky because, Chol would have to be first in line since he's the last one other than Griff to have played centre half forward during the pre-season. Now he apparently copped a concussion, but trained today, so he would probably be my first choice because he can also ruck a little bit. But the other alternatives are Todd Elton and Ivan Soldo. So it's a fairly thin list of alternatives.
Okay. Well, there is the why on earth did we keep Elton if we don't play him? Question.
Who does he have photos of?
But the problem I have with Chol is you've got a player who's maybe ready, but it's marginal, and then you get the added question of even if he tests fine, like taking a knock like that, I think it's his first concussion, it's going to affect, you know, he's a young kid, he plays a man's position. If he plays, he's got to ruck a bit. all of this is hard. Like, you do need reps out of this position. It's just, it seems to me like a lot to put on the kid in what is actually quite a big game. So to me, Chole is a no. So you've got a choice between, Amarik and, Elton. And to me, the case for Elton is you need someone with a little bit of, he just has to compete. And he needs to not be a complete liability on the defensive pressure front. Cause my fear, that's my fear with an Ivy.
If you play Ivy, and Ivy's been emergency both weeks, but you'd probably almost have to ruck him as number one ruck and have Nank forward, and Nank's probably the second best choice as a key forward, but again, you're giving up what Nank's been giving you in the ruck. So yeah, it's not an easy choice.
No, and I don't see why. I don't think you can. I don't think you can go all short.
I think you need somebody else.
Yeah, and like the other thing was Griff was our backup. If one of Asprey or Rance goes down, you're so short, because we're shorter than we have been in the past in the back line. Well, not really, but you know what I mean. We don't have Batchelor and Grimes playing, so I think you have to go tall, even if obviously the next best player is probably a short, because you're probably Lloyd and Miles are the obvious one. So okay, that's a good lead into the other question. To me, Nick, you shuffle around the mids. Miles is your best player who hasn't been playing. You maybe play Caddy or Martin more forward, and you bring Miles into the midfield rotation. He can still go forward a bit. He, to me, is a replacement to Edwards. What say you?
He's probably... Well, there's one A and one B for me, is that bringing Camden McIntosh back after he's kicked three goals, and sort of taking a chance on getting a bit more outside run, and hoping that the other small mid forwards can fill Sheds' role. But yeah, there's no immediately easy like for like. I mean, maybe sort of Lambert slots into that role, and given that Lambert spent a fair bit of time on ball in the second half, that Miles makes sense then. But yeah, they're the two choices for me.
Yeah, I take your point about McIntosh. I mean, to me, I think with McIntosh, you have to think about taking out one of the our many, many halfback flank back pockets. But actually, they all played reasonably well. I was going to mention Ellis's goal. It was so important in the game because it broke a deadlock where it was against the run of play. My God, it was arsey. That was such a hard shot.
And anyway, you hit the post another time as well, and that was
if he kicked that would be more reasonable.
Yeah. Part of the transition for when I think we all started to get frustrated with Brandon Ellis was when his goal kicking turned to mud. But
I'm a Miles fan, and I think he's by far the best player in our VFL. So that's why I've justified why I'm moving it around. So he plays.
So the West Coast Eagles, they're a good team. It's pretty shocking. I know they're also. A very old team. Their average age is over 27.5, which is a lot. Old. They're round one team.
That's Swans-esque.
Yeah, it's pushing. Some the oldest premiership teams of all time are sort of in that ballpark. Their round one team had two guys who played less than 50 games. They've topped up with Petrie and Sam Mitchell. Like they've pushed all the chips in. They're a very deep, experienced, pretty capable team. So they're not going to be easy to beat.
Yeah, and the last two times we played them, they absolutely destroyed us last year. But we weren't very good. Mm. But they were the first team to really put the foot on the throat. The year before we came in, we were both sort of very top of the table teams. And even though we lost by 20 points, that was a, there was a lot of late goals in that. I was at that game and it was really, it was a very depressing game. They just not destroyed is quite the word, where they crushed us. I don't know, quite hard. We just felt like we never had a shot. So yes, you're quite right. They're a very good team, but Nick, who knows? Cause this isn't, even though a lot of the players are the same, who can understand Richmond's forward line right now?
I know. And the bookmakers certainly give us a chance. We're not favourites, but we've got a chance. And Nank is going to go into this game as the most sort of recognised ruckman, which is a first, going against Nathan Vardy. The West Coast key backs, McGovern and it was Burris this week, but they both take a lot of marks, so we're going to have to be careful with our inside 50s to avoid bombing it in incessantly. But yeah, they're beatable. It's not Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's just it's an interesting season. I'm very much open minded and intrigued to see what this Richmond team will do next.
Certainly better than last year.
Yeah, it is actually. The season, as I said before, I genuinely meant that after round two last year, I'd lost interest in the season, and we're into round three. And as I said, right now, I'm marking out on Richmond. I'm Andy.
I'm Nick. We're Richmond Tiger Talk.